The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast. I'm Dave Schoenfield, pinch hitting for Buster Olney. And on the producing end, it's Christina Buswell, pinch hitting for Taylor. So, Christina, this is our chance to make fun of Taylor. So I have to ask you a couple questions. First, do you live in the foothills of Connecticut?
I would say, unfortunately, I don't know who I'm offending when I say that, but unfortunately, I do.
Okay, well, all of Connecticut is kind of in the foothills. The second very important question, have you ever chased a bear with a shovel while wearing thongs?
I have not. I have seen plenty of wildlife in the backyard of my parents' house, my grandparents' house, but I have never had to do that.
Okay, so we've gotten that out of the way. Christina, you're a pro. You've come over from various podcasts at ESPN, so hopefully I won't screw up too much as I get called up from the minor leagues here. Let's get to the news. We had a no-hitter last night, the 7th of 2021. That already ties a modern record for most no-hitters in a season. And let's get to the highlights. First of all, in the 8th inning, the Cubs turn the double play.
And Wilson drives one in the air deep left field. This ball is back toward the wall. It's got a chance, and it is gone. Two-run home run, Wilson Contreras. Cubs lead 3-0.
That's from the Cubs radio network. And then finally, the 9th inning, the Cubs leading the Dodgers 4-0. Craig Kimbrel is on to face A.J. Pollock for the final out.
Bounces one toward first. Rizzo's got it. Steps on the bag. There's one. Throw to second. There's two. A double play.
That is also from the Cubs radio network. After the game, Craig Kimbrel talks about closing it out.
Feels great. I'm not gonna lie. I had no idea until the last out, and everybody came running out. I was just locked into the game, and I was just going out there to do my job. And I mean, everybody did such a great job today. I mean, Zach took the ball and went out there and did what we needed him to do, and we needed this game today. And I mean, there's no better way to do it than this.
And that's from Marquee Sports Network. Christina, I have to ask you a question, though. So this was a combined no-hitter. Does that excite you? It's not quite the same as an individual no-hitter.
I would say it's still exciting, but it is not quite the same.
It is not the same. And I got to throw this out there, too. Not to knock a no-hitter, but this is one of the worst no-hitters of all time. I mean, first of all, it's four pitchers. Not that thrilling. But second of all, the Cubs walked eight batters in the game. That's the most walks in a no-hitter since 2010, the fifth most walks in a no-hitter all time. But here's the topper. Andrew Chafin, who pitched the eighth inning, and Craig Kimbrel, who pitched the ninth, they didn't even know the no-hitter was going on. So I don't know what relievers are doing during a game, but I know they're not actually paying attention to the game itself. So we might have to ask Carl Ravitch about that later on. Our second game of the night, we had another almost no-hitter. Nick Pivetta of the Red Sox took a no-hitter into the 7th inning. He came out after 6 2/3 innings. He'd thrown 100 pitches. So Alex Cora, right call there. You can't leave him in. He had too far to go in the game to leave him in the game. But 0-0, bottom of the 9th, when this happened.
Barnes first base out of the rubber, the right-hander to the belt. Looks to Margot with third and pitches. Swing and a miss. The ball gets away. Heading home, Margot. Here's the throw, the tag. Rays win. Margot scores. The Rays win 1-0, and they're back in first place in the American League East.
That's the Rays scoring the winning run on a wild pitch. That's from 620 WDAE. Big win for the Rays there as they leap over the Red Sox into first place in the AL East. Another red-hot team, the Washington Nationals. Here's the man of June, Kyle Schwarber, at the plate.
Schwarber swings and drives one to deep center. Marte going back, way back at the wall. It is gone. Goodbye. A three-run homer for Kyle Schwarber.
That's from the Nationals radio network. Schwarber has been on fire. That's 12 home runs in June, all in the leadoff spot. He also has 8 home runs, 15 RBIs over his past 5 games, only 4th guy in history to do that, joining Sean Green, Manny Ramirez, and Frank Howard. That's a fun list of sluggers from the past. For the Nationals, that's also 10 wins in their last 11 games as they've kind of quietly climbed back into the playoff race. An even hotter team, the Houston Astros, they beat the Tigers 12-3. Here's Carlos Correa at the plate.
0-2 to Correa. And Carlos lifts this one into shallow right field. Coming in is Cameron. He'll have to play it on a bounce. 2 runs will score as Maldonado and Straw both come home. It's a bloop single for Carlos Correa. He's 3-for-3 tonight with 3 RBIs, and the Astros lead it 8-1.
That's from KBME 790 AM. And then later in the game, Yordan Alvarez came up with the bases loaded.
Here's a 3-1, and Alvarez hits it in the air pretty deep to left center field. Going back is Grossman looking up. See you later! A grand slam for Yordan Alvarez into the Astros bullpen. And the Astros lead it 12-2.
That's also from KBME 790 AM. 11 wins in a row for the Astros. Christina, they are pounding the ball. 95 runs scored over those 11 games. The Pirates beat the Cardinals 8-2. Here's Brian Reynolds with a big hit.
Pitch. Swinging a high fly ball out to right. Nootbaar back. Warning track and gone. A home run for Brian Reynolds. A 3-run shot to right, his 13th of the year, and the Pirates get a big one. They're up 5-1.
That's from 93.7 The Fan. For the Cardinals, it's been a terrible June, 6-15 this month, and they fall 3 games under 500. They're struggling. They need to turn it around to get back in that race. They haven't finished under 500 since, I don't even know, I didn't look it up, Christina, but it's been a long time since the Cardinals have not had a winning season. The Reds and the Braves. Here's Nick Castellanos at the plate late in the game.
Swung on and a high fly ball to deep left field. Did he get it? It is way back there. Home run! Nick Castellanos, a 2-run shot, will score Jonathan India and make this a 4-1 ball game.
That's from 700 WLW as the Reds beat the Braves 5-3. Finally, our man of the season, maybe in 2021, Vladimir Guerrero. He does it again, stepping up to the plate with a long solo home run.
Swinging a drive, a high fly ball to left field, and this ball is gone. Another Vladdy Guerrero home run.
That's from Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That's Vladdy Jr.'s 24th home run of the year. That pushes him back into the major league lead as the Blue Jays beat the Orioles 9-0. That's also 20 consecutive road losses for the Orioles. As unfathomable as that may seem, Christina, not even the longest road losing streak of the season. The Diamondbacks are still active with a 23-game losing streak. And because baseball is all about our obscure trivia, that's the first time since 1894 we've had 2 teams with 20-game losing streaks in the same season. The A's beat the Rangers 5-1. And finally, the Yankees beat the Royals 8-1. And in our last game of the night, here's Eddie Rosario at the plate for Cleveland.
The pitch. And it's swung on, ground ball, base hit to center. That'll score Hedges. Here comes Ahmed Rosario on his way to third, Jose Ramirez. And Eddie Rosario gets a little sweet revenge.
That's from WTAM 1100 as Cleveland beat Minnesota 4-1 in a big AL Central showdown. Let's move on now. Before we get to today's guests, I want to quickly tell you about another ESPN podcast. First Take, Her Take, hosted by Charlie Arnold, Kimberly A. Martin, and Elle Duncan. These 3 women share insight into their lives, pop culture, and all the top sports stories every Wednesday. Follow and download First Take, Her Take, wherever you get your podcasts. Let's get to Todd Radom, and then after that, we'll get to Carl Ravage.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We bring in Todd Radom. You guys know who he is. I don't need to introduce him, but this is fun. We didn't plan this, and maybe we'll do a video of this. I don't know, but I'm scrolling down. I'm showing Todd that I'm wearing a Seattle Rainiers t-shirt. They were the old minor league club before the Mariners and way before that, before the infamous Seattle Pilots that Todd discussed last week on the show. But Todd, what's cool about this shirt I'm wearing?
Dave, you showed me the shirt and I said, I designed that shirt some years ago. So yeah, I have worked with Major League Baseball since, my goodness, 1991 or so, in researching and making digital and making marketable their historic marks. And I did the same thing for minor league baseball starting in about 2006. So that's a golden oldie and a great logo to work with. And everything just kind of like, it's kismet here, Dave.
All right. Further proof you have the coolest job in baseball. I got to ask you one thing, though. Speaking of Seattle. So the Mariners, their Sunday uniforms, the cream jerseys with the yellow trim, I think is an absolutely gorgeous uniform. Can you get them to make that their regular uniform? Their normal ones, they're okay, but, you know, blue. Every team has blue. Can we get the cream and yellow to make them wear that every day? What do you think about that idea?
We could twist some arms here. It's interesting because when the Mariners sort of started to, I don't know, distance themselves slightly from their longstanding look, which they've had, you know, since the early 90s. I mean, it's been a long time. And of course, you know, club hasn't been to the postseason in a long time. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. But they started to kind of tiptoe away from the core look a little bit. And that cream jersey seems to have been really well received. So I don't know. We will see what happens. But I know some influential people. I can twist some arms, like I said. Let's see what we can do about that. I like it too.
Yeah, let's do it, Seattle. The current uniforms, they're jinxed. So let's go to the cream. All right, Todd, let's go to our running storyline here. Who is this week's forgotten franchise?
Well, Dave, today we are going to take a look at the Louisville Colonels, a member of the National League from 1892 to 1899. The team, originally called the Louisville Eclipse, played in the Major League American Association for that league's entire 10-year run from 1882 through 1891 before shifting over to the NL. The Colonels never finished above 500 during their 8 seasons in the National League, but they did feature 5 future Hall of Famers, Louisville played as part of a very bloated 12-team circuit, the result of its having absorbed four former American Association clubs, the Colonels, Baltimore, Washington, and the team that we know now as the St. Louis Cardinals. The 12-team NL was an unwieldy and unprofitable beast, and some clubs, including Louisville, were mired in debt and perennially mediocre. Excuse me, mediocre. By 1899, there was serious talk of eliminating four teams, with Louisville being one of the clubs ticketed for extinction. Making matters worse, the Colonel's ballpark burned down in mid-August. Never a good thing. Temporary seats were installed, but that proved to be less than a good solution. The Colonel's final ever home game was a memorable one. On September 2nd, 1899, Louisville stomped all over the Washington Senators by a score of 25-4. The game was called after eight innings so that Washington could catch a train back home, and the game was still played in a crisp 2.5 hours. Can you imagine that? The Colonels played on the road for the final 6 weeks of the season and finished with a flourish despite the disadvantage, winning 24 of their final 38 games. A good finish, all things considered. After the conclusion of the season, negotiations ensued, and Louisville owner Barney Dreyfus cut himself a deal, purchasing a 47.3% interest in the Pittsburgh Pirates and transferring 14 of his players to the Steel City. This group included Colonel's shortstop Honus Wagner, who formed the core of a Pirates club that became one of the powerhouses of the first decade of the new century. And thus concludes the short, sad tale of the Louisville Colonels, this week's forgotten franchise.
So, Christina, I know you usually do Adam Schefter's podcast, and that's a pretty good podcast. He does a nice job covering the NFL, but you don't get this kind of history, I guarantee, on his podcast like we get on Baseball Tonight. So, Todd, I do have a question. Honus Wagner was reportedly discovered by Ed Barrow, the Hall of Fame GM, who is – biggest claim to fame was trading for Babe Ruth when he ran the Yankees in the 20s. So did he discover Honus Wagner? Is that a true story? Does he, you know, does that give him too much credit?
I've heard that as well, Dave. I would have to do a little research and see if the, you know how these things go sometimes. The, you know, the mythology is shrouded and hangs over things like fog. But I've heard the same thing. And Ed Barrow, you know, looms large over some amazing things, and he was Babe Ruth's manager in Boston, too. So right. Quite a career.
Now, can you name the five Hall of Famers on these Louisville Colonels?
Oh, my goodness. I would have to go back to my notes. You know, but, you know, this was a period of consolidation,
yep,
and of syndicate baseball that led to the demise of clubs like the Cleveland Spiders that we've talked about. And that nickname is looming large these days as well. For other reasons, but yeah, like, you know, players jumping teams, you know, being reassigned, I should say. So, and by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't say, Christina, you know, NFL teams kind of came and went into the ether in the early 1900s, teams in Los Angeles in the 1920s, like all this weird stuff. So if you ever want a forgotten NFL franchises, I know your guy.
Okay. We'll just finish with this. The four teams that folded after 1899 were Louisville, the Cleveland Spiders, the Washington Senators, I believe they were called, and the Baltimore Orioles, who had been a powerhouse team earlier in that decade, and they folded, reinvented when the American League started in 1901, but then after a couple of years, the Baltimore Orioles became the New York Yankees, although they weren't called the Yankees. So that's a story for another day. Let's get to this week's trivia quiz.
All right. And I'll lay this out here for both of you. And Christina went through this, you know, a couple of weeks ago here. So you know this too, Dave. You've got a 1 in 4 chance. So just, you know, take the dart and throw it at the dartboard and know that, you know, it's possible here. So here we go. Only one of the following franchises has an above 500 all-time record across its entire history. Is it A, the White Sox, B, the Athletics, C, the Angels, or D, the Royals? The only one of these teams that has an above 500 all-time record. White Sox, Athletics, Angels, Royals.
Christina, any guess?
You know, these are always so tricky.
1-4.
I'm going to go with the White Sox.
I'm going to go Angels because they were a pretty good expansion team. They were really good in the Mike Scioscia years. Not so good in the Mike Trout years, but I'll go with the Angels.
Christina, yay! It is the Chicago White Sox who, as of today, have a 502 winning percentage with 9,362 wins against 9,270 losses. Dave, you were, your instincts were probably, you know, were right on, but they have a 499 winning percentage. So two epic seasons with Mike Trout in his prime years will push them over the top, but you know, we'll see what happens.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the White Sox, people forget, they were a powerhouse team in the 50s and the 60s. The trouble is, they're always second fiddle to the Yankees, who won the AL pennant almost every year. White Sox winning only in 1959, lost that World Series to the Dodgers. But they were a really strong franchise there for a couple decades.
Yeah, and they had, you know, solid teams going into the 60s here and there. And even though they wore floppy collars and for a couple of games shorts in the 70s, they have that great 77, you know, Southside Hitmen team. So White Sox, steady, but, you know, steady wins the race. Over 500.
And speaking of, you know, doctored baseballs are a big storyline here in 2021. The White Sox in the 60s were known for, at least the rumor mill at the time, was sort of waterlogging their baseballs. They had Hoyt Wilhelm was a knuckleball reliever. I think they had another knuckleballer. They wanted to get a lot of ground balls. So games in Comiskey Park in that era were notoriously low scoring. It was just kind of a, I guess, a strategic element to their baseball in that time. But yeah, there's always been shenanigans going on with the baseball, I guess.
And one other thing about the White Sox of those years, they had legendary groundskeeper Roger Bossard, who would, let's say, manipulate the infield grass and dirt to suit the needs of that particular team. Gamesmanship, Dave, it's been a part of the game since, you know, since the 1869 Cincinnati Red Stockings.
No, that's a great point. You know, Maury Wills, the great stolen base thief, you know, back in the 60s, played for the Dodgers, the San Francisco Giants, their big rival. They were known for, you know, making the dirt around first base a little softer so Wills would have trouble, you know, getting a good start on stealing second base. So I don't think teams do that kind of stuff as much anymore. All these fields are so perfectly manicured and, you know, they're pretty uniform now from ballpark to ballpark. But yeah, back then Tiger Stadium was known for its long grass, you know. Yeah. You know, of course, then you had all the AstroTurf stadiums that came in the 70s. But yeah, too much uniformity in today's game.
Home field advantage. Come on now.
Right, exactly. They'll ask the Orioles and the Diamondbacks about home field advantage because they would like to win a game on the road.
Well, it's funny you say that, Dave, because I am off to Baltimore, or to Buffalo, excuse me, this weekend, where I will be seeing said Baltimore Orioles try to get off the schneid against the Buffalo Blue Jays.
There we go. 20 road losses in a row for the Orioles. Maybe Todd will see. If you go to all three games, they can tie Arizona's ongoing record of 23 road losses in a row. Baseball in 2021. It's so wonderful.
Exactly.
All right, Todd, thanks a lot.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Good to see you both.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today.
Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Rabby Train with Carl Ravage on Baseball Tonight.
We bring aboard Carl Ravage. You guys all know who he is. Carl, how you doing today? You're out in Omaha for the College World Series.
Yeah, I've been surrounded by great baseball, incredible environment. Mississippi State is still here, Dave, and we believe that the entire state of Mississippi has either made their way here or are making their way here, because baseball, as you know, especially at the collegiate level, is religion in that state and several other SEC states. This will be as large a crowd. We stay in the Hilton Hotel, which is literally a 45-second walk to the ballpark, and so is Mississippi State, and so is Virginia, who lost last night. And after they won their last game, Mississippi State, with all no exaggeration, there must have been 500 to 1,000 people in the lobby as the team came back. I've never seen a scene like that.
That's a great point. You know, in our jobs, we focus so much just on Major League Baseball, but we often forget how big college baseball is in certain regions, in the South, in Texas. You know, LSU that draws 10,000 fans a game or something like that. You know, baseball, it's so much more than just the games we see on TV in the major leagues. So I think that's one reason, I'm sure you'll agree, why the College World Series is so much fun.
Without question. And it's really why the Super Regionals are probably more fun than the College World Series. If for no other reason, you get to see places like Fayetteville, Arkansas, and Starkville, Mississippi, where when you turn on the television and you see what those folks are doing and how passionate they are and how full. I mean, how many times do we turn on a Yankee game and see those seats behind the home plate empty? You turn on a television game in Starkville, and it looks like they are sitting like tennis fans 3 feet from the field. It's unbelievable. And I actually was with the Mississippi State Athletic Director last night, John Cohen. I said, so what are you doing? If you've never seen Mississippi State's ballpark, I encourage you to kind of Google it and just look. They have lofts, which are basically condominiums within, you know, 20 feet of left field, and they're sold for $78,000 a year. You lease them, they're full, they're building another one. And those people that lease them for the year can go use them at any point that they want, regardless if there's a baseball game or not. A lot of folks use them to, as I was told last night, for the football. If you just want to get away, if you want to bring your pet to see a vet on the campus because they have a big veterinary school, you bring them there, you stay overnight. It's a condo. But they have one of those, which house 12. They're adding 12 more. And it costs, as I said, 70-something thousand dollars a year, and they're full. Again, that's the beauty of college baseball that we don't see in the Northeast.
Yeah, it's one of my lifelong goals to get out to Omaha for the College
event.
World Series.
Great.
Yeah. So we have two games today, Vandy and NC State, weather permitting. You said it might rain there again today. For now, at 2 p.m. Eastern, start on ESPN2. Then Texas, Mississippi State, 7 p.m. on ESPN. That first game, Vandy has to beat them twice. Where are they in the pitching rotation? Are they back to Kumar Rocker today yet?
Yeah, they are. I mean, that's sort of the lean that Tim Corbin has. And Tim Corbin is, as you know, whether we're talking college baseball or Major League Baseball, the list of Major League players that have come out of that Vanderbilt program since he's been there is eye-popping. And Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter are the next two that are going to come out of there. Yeah, Rocker's, you know, going to pitch today. The biggest issue for Rocker and Vanderbilt is the fact that NC State is a really, really good team. NC State is diverse. They are athletic. They went into Fayetteville, Arkansas in a super regional where you have to win two out of three, and they lost the first game 21-2. So you're in the most hostile environment. You lost the first game by 19 runs And then you still come back and win the next two games to get here, and you haven't lost since. That they're a team playing with a lot of momentum. They absolutely believe they can beat anybody. It doesn't matter if Rocker and Leiter were tag-teaming this thing like we saw at the major league level yesterday with a couple of teams flirting with and one succeeding with a no-hitter. Yeah, so you're looking at major league pitcher in Rocker. And then the night game, you're looking at a Mississippi State team that, again, is going to have an absolutely nutty crowd with two guys that have in 3 years been to the World Series every year it's been played. I mean, that is their college resume. Attend Mississippi State, play baseball, go to World Series. Year one, year two, nobody came last year, and here we are again in year three. So for Rowdy and Tanner Allen, that's what they've known, and they're desperate to win one.
Yeah, it feels like an old school matchup. When I first started watching the College World Series in the 80s with Texas when they had Roger Clemens, and Mississippi State when they had Will Clark and Rafael Palmeiro. So that's a classic matchup. Texas, again, they have one loss, so this is double elimination.
Yep.
They got to beat Mississippi State twice to get to the final. So are you feeling anything? You mentioned NC State upsetting Arkansas, who I think was the number one team in the country, ranked ahead of Vanderbilt.
Yep.
So are they kind of the surprise team here that can pull it off, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if momentum, and that, of course, is your next day starting pitcher, and today it's Kumar Rocker. And look, Vanderbilt never should have won the game that they won last the other night. I don't know if you saw it, but against Stanford, they were down by two with two outs in the ninth. And somehow one of the best pitchers in the country ended up throwing a wild pitch over the catcher's head, which allowed Vanderbilt to win the game. So, I mean, look, there's a little bit of that Vanderbilt, like, what the heck's going on? There's a little bit of that Vanderbilt, we're tired of seeing you, going on. Yeah, there's no question. NC State's got the momentum, and Mississippi State, because they're 2-0, have a big advantage. You know, Texas, they did play last night until around midnight here in Omaha. They're a little toasty. So, yeah, I would think we would see NC State and we would see Mississippi State in the final, and that would be a great final.
Yeah, I was talking to one of our writers who was there this week, Ryan McGee.
Yeah.
He's a huge College World Series fan, and he said this has a chance to be the best CWS he's ever seen. So that's big words from a huge fan. A lot of great games. Texas rallied late last night to win that one. I mean, I don't know how many years you've been going down there, a few years now, but does this so far rank up there? Would you agree with that?
Well, I think the night games have been as exciting a group of night games as we've ever seen. And Texas didn't score, you know, until late last night in the ninth inning. We've seen two no-hitters broken up late in games by home runs, which have led the team that hit the home run to win. We saw it with Mississippi State, and we saw NC State do the same thing to Jack Leiter. So I would say that the games at night, certainly, and those are the games that Kyle Peterson, Eduardo Perez, and I do, have been the most compelling games collectively I've ever seen. So we came in knowing it would be wide open, and maybe that's how Ryan associated it with it could be the best because it was the most wide open, and it has lived up to it. The games have been compelling. The pace has been quick. There have been home runs, which was always a concern at TD Ameritrade. I mean, geez, when UCLA was back competing with Bauer and Cole, you know, you'd see the outfield play 30 feet behind the infield. We don't see that anymore. You know, the baseball seams have been lowered, and it's very legitimate. So it's high-level baseball with all sorts of energy, and that's sometimes what we lack in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no, I agree. I felt the same way watching the women's softball 100%. College World Series. That was the most fun I've had watching a baseball softball event in a long time. And same thing here, that energy. It's so fun to watch. So check out those two games on ESPN and ESPN2 today. Couple MLB questions. So, Carl, we had a no-hitter last night, a combined no-hitter by the Cubs, seventh no-hitter of the season. But here's what I want to ask you. After the game, both Andrew Chafin, who pitched the eighth inning, and Craig Kimbrough, who pitched the ninth, had no idea it was a no-hitter was going on. So what are relievers doing during a game? Because they're not watching the game, apparently.
No, that's a great point. And the mind of the mind of a reliever is always credited with its ability to forget very quickly. Well, that if it forgets things very quickly, it kind of suggests that they're not really tuned into what's going on around them at times, or they can flush it. Look, whether you're flipping seeds, you're bashing the new policy about having pitchers be searched, you're discussing where you're going for dinner, you certainly ain't paying attention to the close details of a game that are going on for the first 6, 7, 8 innings to know I'm coming into the game, I got a no hitter. We are not focused at all. And when we come in, our focus is one thing. I need to get 3 outs, or in the case of, a specialist, I need to get 1 out.
Right.
Well, Kimbrel, he came in. I got to get 3 outs. We're going to win the game. We're going to move on. Got to hit the post-game buffet and shut it down. The Cubs are going to be tied for first place. That's what it was. He had no idea. And I think we all acknowledge, whether it's this field or others, sometimes when you turn your brain off, it doesn't get in the way. And I think that's the best way for most relievers to behave.
I remember years ago when I first started ESPN, Tim Kirkjian told me something about his view on relievers, or closers specifically. He said, to be a great closer, you either got to be really smart or really dumb, meaning you can analyze the situation, or like you said, nothing affects you. So I'm not sure where Kimbrel fits in there, but he's having a great year. You know, speaking of him, you know, he's back looking like the Kimbrel of a few years ago, ERA under 1. You know, a few weeks ago, there are rumors, oh, maybe the Cubs would consider trading him because they've called this, kind of a middle ground transition year. But now that they're, in first place or fighting for first place, I think they keep him, right? They don't trade him at this point.
Look, the Cubs have gummed everything up for Tom Ricketts, et cetera, Jed Hoyer. They have gummed it all up because they are exceeding expectations. To some degree, the Indians have gummed it up because they are just 2 games out and the White Sox are all banged up. To a large degree, the San Francisco Giants, while they haven't gummed it up because the expectations were different, the Giants still lead the Dodgers and Padres. The Dodgers and the Padres trail the Giants by 4.5 games, and we are almost in July. So they are forcing their front office to think about adding. Those 3 teams have made life very different. I wouldn't even say difficult, just in a nice way, different than what they expected. The Cubs shouldn't make any moves that are going to change the payroll. But I think, David, you would acknowledge, and anyone else, baseball, these are great reminders of the team sport that baseball is. We're so focused right now on the NBA and its postseason, and individual names like Ben Simmons keep popping up. And is this guy a superstar? Is Trey Young on that next level? You know, baseball, you cannot rely on one player, let alone 2 players. We see it here at the College World Series, but we're certainly reminded all the time, how in the world can the Cubs be competitive if they don't have Yu Darvish? Well, they can. We're finding that out, and we're reminded of it. We're not finding it out. We're reminded that this is the ultimate team sport, and it's the ultimate kitchen. When you have the right ingredients, you can make the most perfect meal ever, and it may not be the ingredients you originally thought were going to taste the best. Well, guess what? This is working in San Francisco. It's working in Chicago. It's working in other places like New York, even though we've had some injuries with the Mets. It works. And that's, to me, what always makes baseball great. There is you never knew, but we always hop on, what are they doing? They can't trade Darvish. What are they doing? They're never going to win. And lo and behold, they're winning. So I think when you get to this point of the season, you don't think about moving a Craig Kimbrel. It's a very difficult thing. However, I've just set the stage for, well, if they traded Craig Kimbrel and got a couple of pieces, they still may have somebody who can close games. You still might. And that's the beauty of this game.
Yeah, no, I guess that would be the theory. Their bullpen is so good. But the way, he's been such a huge part to their success. But yeah, it's a great point. That's why I love the Giants story, because in March, the big storyline, Dodgers, Padres, it's going to be this epic 2-team NL West race. You know, they're going to both win 100 games. And here are the Giants, having this kind of season, you know, so that's fantastic. Another guy, you know, you mentioned Yu Darvish, who the Cubs got rid of, was Kyle Schwarber, who has been red hot, 12 home runs in June, and the Nationals, who 2 weeks ago, we were like, they're going to be trading Max Scherzer. They're going to be trading Schwarber. Well, they've won 10 out of 11. And in that division where there's not a super team, are the Nationals back in it? So I don't think they're going to be trading away players at this point either. Do you agree with that as well?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, look, Mike Rizzo is not inclined to do it, and right. You are 3.5 games back. I will say, though, that to me, that team, especially given some of the issues with their pitching and their injuries, and having just won a World Series, in some ways, you buy favor with your fan base. You just did this, and you did it with Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin. And we really haven't seen Steven Strasburg, who, when he's on, to me, is the most dominant pitcher. I think his stuff is better than any other pitcher's when he's on. And that means when he's playing. And that obviously hasn't been the case. To me, the Nationals more are in that category. Well, we do have, if it's 3.5, if we fall 4 out, we get to a point where they have pieces, Scherzer in particular, Schwarber may be another one of those if you need a bat, that you can move. And I just think because you've bought fancy with your fan base, you have the ability to say, hey, hold on here, folks. Look at the youth on our team. Look at the athleticism. If we were to move one of these two, we could get younger and better and next year be right back here again. We have to be realistic. We probably are not as good as even the Braves, if they ever got healthy. We're probably not as good as, and I guess I'm going to say, the Giants, the Padres, and the Dodgers, although you're inclined to say the Dodgers and Padres. I don't think that they're that good. But if you were to ever have Scherzer and Strasburg pitching at the same time, then anything can happen. But I think that they are that exception of, we got some unbelievably valuable pieces here, and we got some teams that would be desperate. And a starting stud like that guy, Scherzer, can get a lot in return. So to me, that's the one of them that is in the position to say to its fan base, look, we did try. Like, we're not doing this now, but we're going to do it sometime in August. We got to figure out when is when, if we continue to be 3, 4, 5 games out. And trust me, we'll be back next year. And look, Rizzo's really good. You know, he wins trades. He'll figure out how to win another one.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating what they do. You know, they have arguably the weakest farm system in the majors. So you flip Scherzer, get a couple of really good prospects, that might be too hard to turn down. Well, I'll end you with this one. You know, speaking of Schwarber, the Yankees are so right-handed. Boy, they could use him, you know, as a left-handed bat in that lineup. I know his defense in left field wouldn't be great, but the way he's hitting, I'd live with his defense to get another lefty bat in that lineup.
Yeah, and look, the Yankees are not a team that is going to trade anything. You know, this is why we're here. We are in a win now. We will continue to add. Yeah, a left-handed bat like that makes great sense. By the way, so does a Max Scherzer make great sense there. They obviously don't have great starting pitching depth. And that is the team, whether they're 4 games out, 2 games out, or 5.5 games out, there is a reason never to say never, given the talent that they have. So, sure, that would make great sense. And then, look, they're playing a little better, and Sanchez is hitting a little bit more, but I could certainly see them shaking things up in an effort to get better. I don't think that they just trade an everyday player to not get something in return they think is going to help them win now. And this is the ultimate win now team. With all due respect to the Dodgers and the Rays and even the Astros, this is the ultimate win now team in Major League Baseball, the New York Yankees.
No doubt. I mean, 12 years and counting, not that I'm counting, but there's kids playing Little League who have never seen their beloved Yankees in a World Series, let alone win one. So, yeah, I know they're right up on that luxury tax threshold, but the Yankees, they got to do something. Carl, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight. I think we're going to have another good one, and you'll be back next week, I believe, with Buster.
That's right. Thanks, Joni.
Bleacher Tweets.
Thank you to both of our guests today. Now let's get to our Bleacher Tweet of the day. This is from PK Steinberg. He asks, do you think there will be evidence that spider tack or other foreign substances and the endeavor for spin rate has led directly to a rash of pitchers needing Tommy John surgery and other injuries? If it's that sticky, imagine the effort needed to release the ball. It's a great question, and I think that's one we're going to be discussing for many years. But we know one thing. Studies have proven the number one indicator for Tommy John injuries is velocity. Now, these things go a little hand in hand. Pitchers are using grip mostly for spin, but also for velocity. And we've seen what's happened, you know, the past decade as fastball velocity has skyrocketed. I mean, keep in mind what Tyler Glasnow said last week. Yeah, he was blaming the lack of pitch substance grip for his injury. But he also said, hey, I'm 6'7 or 6'8 and I throw 100. So most pitchers that throw 100 eventually get Tommy John surgery. So velocity is still the number one indicator. But a good question, something to keep an eye on. That's it for today. So once again, thanks to Todd and Carl. Thanks to Buster, whose Cal Ripken-like streak of hosting this podcast ends for a day. Have a great day, everybody, and a shout out to all my friends and family in Seattle. Try to stay cool this weekend. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.